Welcome to the fourth episode of Unraveling Karma, an evolutionary astrology podcast. My name is Tom Jacobs, and you can find me on the web at tdjacobs.com, where I offer a true Black Moon Lilith Natal report, and I've also just announced pre-orders until the end of November for a 2012 natal astrology report focusing on healing and changing your consciousness about Pluto, Chiron, Lilith, and Lucifer. So I've just announced pre-orders for that. That's pretty exciting. You can see that on my site. The fourth episode, which you're listening to, is the second part of a talk called Unraveling Karma that I gave in November of 2007. It consists of two example charts that I go into detail about what is happening with these people's lives, what their beliefs about life are, and how they shifted their consciousness and changed things for the better and became, in some way, at least moderately more happier people. So the chart data for these two charts, there are two charts. One is male, and that data, those data are November 28th, 1973, in San Rafael, California. The second word is R-A-F like Frank, A-E-L, California. The time is 1 p.m., and it's really close to 1 p.m. if it's not one on the dot. You know, when you always look at a chart and the numbers are always totally on the button, you know, you doubt it a little bit, but this is extremely close. And the second chart is female number two, and that date of birth is October 24th, 1979, in Redwood City, California, and the time is 10:35 a.m. So I have the handout from the talk that I gave, this Unraveling Karma talk, and if you email me at tom@tdjacobs.com, I'm happy to send you this handout. It's got some handy definitions of karma, and also the tenets of evolutionary astrology, and the little method, what I'm using, how I'm analyzing these charts, the South Node by sign, house, and aspect, the South Node ruler by house, sign, and aspect, and Pluto by sign, house, and aspect, telling me what's going on with this person's belief and emotional memories brought over from past lives, what they think is happening, and then how they can learn to get present and see what is actually happening that is probably differs from what they think should be happening. So enjoy this episode, and if you have questions on your own chart to be answered in future episodes, email me at karma@tdjacobs.com with your question and your birth data, and I will address it on a future episode. You'll get about 10 minutes probably of me working out that problem in your chart. So I do this podcast and do it that way to help the people who ask questions, but also to help anybody else see how astrology can be used to understand karma, to educate exactly what karma really is, and also teach you how to change it by shifting your consciousness about what's happening and what you think is happening. All right, so enjoy this episode. Again, my name is Tom Jacobs, and you can find me at tdjacobs.com. Going on to the second chart, who is male, affectionately known as male. You know, the south node of the moon, you can see the north node's in the 10th in late Sagittarius. The south node is in late Gemini in the 4th house. And it's conjunct a retrograde Saturn in Cancer, and then it's square Pluto in Libra in the 7th. The south node in the fourth house is somebody who has a lot of experience in environments where home comes first, family comes first, mom comes first, tradition and history are very important. It's in Gemini, and Gemini is the communication and perception. Gemini is teaching. Gemini is lots of things. My personal take on him is that he studied what his family wanted him to study, like in the tradition of where they were. So that's with the fourth house south node.
with Saturn on it, it adds more about the thing of tradition, because Saturn is time, and Saturn is this other part of history. When Saturn comes on the south node, the environments are very serious. There's a levity and a heaviness in those environments. They can be different things. It can be that they're extremely structured. It can be that there's poverty. There's a very serious concern about something in the environments. A lot of hard work has to be done in these environments. When you have something on the south node, you're carrying in that energy because you're very accustomed to it. You know everything about that. So for him, he knows everything about taking responsibility and refusing to take responsibility. He knows everything about being an authority figure and also refusing to grow up. Like, he knows everything about all sides of this Saturn and Cancer in the fourth, because it's on the south node. These environments were filled with this energy. Pluto and Libra square the nodes. Again, a Pluto and Libra person in the seventh. There's a there's an issue of fairness. There's a perception of not being able to be heard in relationship, not to be able to have relationships, because Pluto is square the node, and it's also square to Saturn, which is on the south node. There is a perception that power, which Pluto signifies, power in the form of other people in the seventh house, is always a threat. Because Pluto, which is power, gives friction to where he's coming from. So his environments met power and it was negative. I think if we stick with the story that's thematically about following in the tradition, with the south node in Gemini with Saturn and Cancer on it, the concerns of family, the requirements of the local tradition, and what is expected of you. If we continue with that, then Gemini can be actually studying in that tradition and actually being a student or a communicator in that tradition. With the south node ruler in this case is Mercury, and Mercury is in Scorpio in the eighth house. So he, in this environment that is very, very Saturnian, very, very lunar too, very, very moon energy, a lot of moon energy, and Gemini energy. And Gemini energy is the energy of curiosity. And, I mean, taken to an extreme, it's relativism, because everything is possibly true. And no matter how much you know, then around the next corner, there's probably a piece of information, and that piece of information will make everything different. And so you wait to hold on to something that's true until you get that one more piece of information. And so you have this, the energy I get from him is that, and I've gotten from him, is that the tradition is important, but you can't really question it, because it's like, it's just what it is. You have to do what you have to do. With the south node ruler in Mercury in Scorpio in the eighth house, Mercury in Scorpio is, I'm talking about a person, Scorpio is the energy of uncovering truth, of finding everything out, of it's the probing, penetrating energy that no matter what's happening, it wants to know what's happening behind that. So it's always digging behind surfaces, and it wants to understand on a very, very deep level. So you have someone coming from this environment that's all about tradition and doing what is expected of you, and then he's the one who's asking the hard questions that nobody wants to answer, nobody even wants to hear. And it's in the eighth house, and that's the house of intimacy and also trust. So he is somebody who is trying to develop bonds with other people, to develop trusting relationships with other people by being as honest as possible. And it's not working. It doesn't work. So aspects to the south node ruler, so aspects to him is square Jupiter and Aquarius in the 12th. Jupiter is always something big. Jupiter is often religious. Jupiter is often someone in charge and a teacher. And so he's asking all these questions. and he's getting challenged by Jupiter and Aquarius in the 12th figure. So just backtracking again, what he expects the world to be like. He expects the world to be based in tradition, to have threads going back in time where you could trace genealogy, you could be proud of where you come from. You have pictures of the great-great-grandmother that you never met, but you have a picture of her because you're connected to her. His expectation of him is that none of that stuff really tells him what he wants to know. But he's got to do it. He's got to be involved in it. But it doesn't really answer any of his eagerness to learn things below the surface. So he is... it's kind of like he expects not to fit in, because he wants to know much more than anybody in his environment is willing to get into. Mercury in the 8th house in Scorpio, anybody who has this, whether it's a South Node ruler or not, will have the tendency or have the capacity to know other people's secrets without those people saying them. He perceives in a Scorpio way, in a penetrating way, in the 8th house, which is where people are the most vulnerable. So he's the one who can see that so-and-so is hiding something. Makes people very uncomfortable. It's very difficult to have a cohesive family unit if you have this kid over here, you know. And it could be unintentional. It could be like, you know, why does Uncle Jimmy drink all the time? Like you say it out loud at the dinner table. Like that kind of thing. Like it's a normal enough question. Like the kid wants to know why Uncle Jimmy drinks all the time. But it's totally taboo. It's totally not acceptable. So this is kind of how he expects to be treated. And in a long time in his life, he was that, so that he could be treated that way. You know, like he made that come true, because we all do that. So the Pluto for him, I already said it was square this Cancer, Saturn, and square the Gemini South Node. But so the deepest desire is to learn harmony and balance, which is Libra work, in relationship with other people in the 7th house. The fear is in not being treated as an equal and in not being listened to or heard, to have his own needs paid attention to. He first came to me, his first question was about this temper tantrums, having anger, extreme anger, freak out anger. Like, when you witness it, you can't even believe that you're witnessing, like this thing exists. It's just absolute pure anger. And so he was one of the first people that I worked on this multidimensional nature thing with, after I started practicing, where this is obviously a Mars anger problem. And so he learned various ways to do Mars in Aries in the first house, and it moves the energy differently. So basically what we're talking about is the Mars, the planet of doing and heat and fire and aggression, is in the house of the body, working in the sign of aggressiveness, you know, working in the area. So he's basically a bundle of energy. So if he doesn't do something proactive about it, he's going to derail everything else he's doing, because his body is just boiling over with energy. So I actually prescribed to him doing some kind of physical activity every day where he perspired. Like, we actually moved that energy and did that. When he did that, he was able to start calming down. And when he did that, he was able to have more mental and emotional space to see these expectations of fairness and how he was basically telling himself stories. Because if he's just looking around and filled with energy, I mean, it sounds like a cartoon in the way I'm explaining it, but he really is like a dynamo of energy. And if he doesn't move and doesn't do it, it's going to derail everything else that he's trying to do in his life. So he was able to understand this is basically self-care, first house stuff, Aries stuff, and that helped him understand how to have more energy to listen to other people. So, because one of the things with Pluto and Libra in the 7th is it doesn't want to listen because it's pretty sure it's not going to be listened to. So there's a whole like kibosh on the possibility of fairness. It wants fairness, but it's afraid to go after it because it's been hurt so many times. So let me just look at what I have for him as the core beliefs. I think I've covered them, but I'm going to read them anyway. Tradition is all important. This this south and fourth house thing with the Saturn and Cancer. Number two, I don't know how to create, and I probably can't have fairness in relationship. This Pluto and Libra in the seventh square in the nodes. And then the third one is power from others is always a threat. Like power in the form of others is always a threat. This Pluto square, the Saturn South Node conjunction. So the healing Pluto work for him is in committing to listening, but taking care of himself so he has energy and time to actually sit down and be able to interact with somebody instead of just, you know, being a little firecracker. And when he does that, he realizes that he knows how to do it. He really understands it. But if he's coming from the place of hurt because he expects not to be accepted, then there's no possibility of sharing. This idea of this crust and then this goo in the middle with Pluto, when we deal with the crust, when we deal with the wounding, we find we have access to this tremendous understanding. And not only that, we have a sense of fulfillment for doing something that we really feel like we came here to do, like this, like I said, this sense of destiny. So for him, he loves dealing with people. Part of his work is as a counselor. He does basically spiritual counseling and coaching. And for him to listen in that way, then he's able to offer what he is doing, what he knows and understands and has experienced. So he's actually able to create fairness and harmony in his life by helping other people to do it too. So this kind of nice little spider web of effect when he's willing to accept that his expectations, his conditioning, his fear about how things probably are, when he's willing to accept that that's probably not true or might not be true. Will you just actually listen to me right now? And if he says yes, everything shifts. So that's him. Male. So female number two. South node is in Pisces in the third house. And the note I made on this on one of her these beliefs is that suffering is everywhere. And I wrote that because Pisces has the ability to feel everything on a really high level, but kind of absorb everything. And then the third house is that house of perception. So, and Pisces is also attuned to other people's suffering. So you have this awareness of Piscean things that's very, 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 very sharp. So she's coming from places probably where a lot of healing work needed to be done, where there's a catastrophe or where there's a lot of, things weren't right and compassion was needed. Pisces, Neptune, symbols of compassion. So she expects the world to be like that. So she walks around aware of everybody else's problem. In short, you know. So aspects to the nodes are it's square moon and ascendant in Sagittarius in the first. Whenever the ascendant or the midheaven is square the nodal axis or conjuncted, we have to include both ends of the axis. So with the ascendant, we're talking about the ascendant and the descendant, and then with the midheaven, and also the IC, the bottom of the heaven that marks the beginning of the fourth house. Whenever one of those is involved in the nodal story, both of them are involved. What it means when the ascendant is square the nodes is that basically boundaries are not understood. First house, which is the ascendant, begins is the house of self. Seventh house, which the descendant begins, is the house of other. And if that axis is square the nodes, we really don't know how to separate ourselves from others, or we don't really know how to take care of ourselves, because we just feel very mixed up when we're with other people. We feel very, very aware of what's happening with them for some reason. So square the moon indicates that, I mean, the moon is happiness, But the moon is also what we need to do in order to make ourselves happy. So if we're talking about an environment that has the moon square it, we're talking about an environment that can't really take care of itself. It could be that it can't sustain itself as it is. It could be that it is all work and no play, or it could be that it's all play and no work. Like, something about needs isn't being addressed. Then the South Node is opposite Jupiter in Virgo in the ninth house. What always comes up for me when I'm talking with her is, when I talk about this Jupiter in Virgo in the ninth house, is this idea of having a guiding principle. Virgo is a sign of discrimination. And Jupiter and the ninth house are about kind of right brain, intuitive knowing. And so this combination I see as having a guiding principle to live by, instead of just responding to everything kind of left and right the way Pisces might do in the third house, the local environment. Third house in one way has to do with how things really are in this moment. And the ninth house, in contrast, will have to do with not necessarily how things should be, but kind of overarching principles of what's happening behind that. So if you're doing a Pisces third house thing, you are very fluid in any given moment. If you're doing a Virgo ninth house thing, you have a philosophy, you know what it is, you're very, very clear, and then you can fit all of the things that you're doing into that. So in terms of this environment, Jupiter being on the North Node, it didn't have this idea going. It didn't have this idea. It didn't get to and Virgo is also about choosing. It didn't get to choose its philosophy, basically. If you talk about environments where something has gone wrong, you continually find yourself in flood or earthquake environments or something, and you are responding to what's happening immediately. You're responding to what's happening. It could be, it's a different response than Aries. Aries is needing an instinctual response in the moment. Third house is, to contrast it, third house is basically just responding to whatever is lying around at hand. So it's like dealing with all of these things instead of like being aware that I have a clock going and I don't want to keep you too long. Like, that's kind of an overarching principle, but like actually just like worrying about my papers would be like a very third house thing. So, so the environment didn't get to choose its direction, didn't get to do its big idea, whatever that was, didn't get to have one. So that's the environment. The South Node ruler is Neptune. Pisces is ruled by Neptune. And it's in Sagittarius in the first house. It's conjunct that moon that square the nodes. So she identifies as this Neptune in Sagittarius in the first house, but also with the moon. So she will identify this moon-Neptune combination. And like Neptune, you know, basically can bring everything out of concreteness into the abstractness. It can bring it into, like, you can go directly from talking about real-world things to otherworldly things, or the dream world, or dream states, or something. So Neptune is this mystical, spiritualizing, boundary-destroying, boundary-melting thing. So she is Neptune, and she also identifies as lunar. I sometimes see this as kind of like a great mother figure, like a divine mother. Like, this is her role in this environment. In the first house implies leadership. It can imply being alone in some way, and leadership is one side of that. Aspects to that, to the Neptune, it's square Jupiter on the North Node, and it's square Saturn on the Midheaven. These are the hard aspects anyway. So she, in this environment, is given friction by each Jupiter and Saturn. So Jupiter and Virgo, like I said, is like this big idea, but being very, very clear about what the big idea is. So it could be a philosophy. And then Saturn is work, authority, maturity, something. The way I see this playing out for her in the karmic past in these environments is that in doing her work as this kind of great mother healing figure, she gets friction from established social authorities, which is Saturn on the Midheaven, And also, probably Jupiter could be religion. It could actually turn out to be religion, Jupiter in the ninth house. And in Virgo, a kind of oppressive religion. Because Virgo, the negative side of Virgo is, you know, master-slave dynamic. It's very ugly. Subservience, owning people, crap, it's horrible. So those are those basic aspects to that. And then with Pluto, what feels like it went wrong and yet was really, really important to her is Libra in the 10th house. Well, the 10th house, let's just do it with the keyword thing. The 10th house is accomplishment, achievement, ambition, place in the world. And Libra is the sign of extremes, and the desire is to have an appropriate kind of public life. So in one way, this wounding is about being so consumed by a job, so overdone in her work in the world, that she didn't. It just felt totally overdone by what was expected of her in her community. The other thing could be it could have resulted. Because Pluto in the 10th is also a signature for being discredited publicly. So it could also be, given this Saturn on the midheaven, this like authority figure that is very powerful and public, it could be discrediting her, so she feels totally ashamed for whatever she did because she was, you know, I don't know, made a laughing stock of, whatever. So down to her, you know, what her core beliefs. I have four for her. The first one is suffering is everywhere. The South Node in Pisces, the third, this awareness of all this stuff. The next one is I'm responsible for taking care of others, which is a South Node ruler Neptune conjunct Moon in the first. Like I said, kind of a great mother archetype, but basically it's also being so attuned personally to what's happening with other people. And this Moon Neptune is very watery and very. Well, it's a real marker for compassion. One of the ways to manifest this is being extremely compassionate, because you have the moon, this like personal feeling investment in Neptune, which is this like Neptune is the great everything else. Like Neptune is the great beyond, the great, you know, whole of all existence. So you have this awareness and this feeling about wanting to help others. People who are very, very Neptunian find themselves asking the question, who am I if I don't help them? If I'm aware of it, I don't help them. So for her, there's this self-definition of being a helper. Moon square the nodes. What she needs to learn is to take care of herself. Moon in the first house square the nodes. Her own needs are important now to explore and to figure out. So for her, what she's had to do is learn to have boundaries, learn how to energetically take care of herself, because she's all kinds of intuitive, psychic, whatever label you want. She's all in that. Just like it's like immediate, and she's a friend of mine, and we actually have a connection, and she actually knows when big things happen in my life. She'll like email me and say, "Whoa, what happened?" You know, because she can feel that. You know, so for her to be able to progress and to kind of like live however she wants to live, she's got to learn how to have boundaries and how not to be totally connected to everything all the time. So her belief. I'm responsible for taking care of others. The real thing is she's responsible for taking care of herself, but she's conditioned into being aware of these other people's issues so much. Okay, so the other part, so one of these other beliefs is, I don't get to choose where my energy goes or develop stability and have a clear game plan for how to live my life. So that's Jupiter in Virgo in the ninth on the North Node. So for her, she has to develop a game plan. She can't just respond to what's happening in the moment and be Piscean about anything that may or may not be happening. She has to kind of get Virgo on herself. The way to do that is, when something's on the North Node, you're not really sure how to do it, do the planet that's on the North Node. So for her, it's Jupiter. So have an idea of what's happening. Develop a game plan. Jupiter's about risk, but Jupiter is also, in a certain way, about planning in that it's imagining. So Saturn is actually the one that gets everything done and sharpens the pencils and you know, files everything. But Jupiter is the one that has the vision of what's coming. So for her, it's developing a vision of where she wants to go or her life to go as a game plan. and then two, it's in Virgo. So we're talking about methodically going through it. Now, because, like, just to tie back in terms of real experience again, this Saturn squaring the South Node ruler, for her, there's a belief that, oh, this is the Saturn square moon that I mentioned in the opening. For her, there's a belief that she can't have what she needs because there's an external authority. There's a Saturn on the midheaven that's going to get in her way and kind of give her guff. So how that manifests in her life is that she is actually afraid to be a Saturn in Virgo on the midheaven person because she's received crap from them in the past. So her Saturn function is right on the midheaven. Like, you know, one of her 10 functions or whatever is right there. And she has to learn to overcome her resistance to developing that and bringing that out. She hasn't had her first Saturn return yet. It's coming up within, I guess, the next year, year and a half. So she gets to really explore what it means for her to, in one vocabulary, take responsibility for her place in the world. That will challenge this conditioning in the past that she's aware of. But she's definitely aware of it. We've talked about it. But, you know, so she has that opportunity. So another, the fourth thing I have about her belief, this core belief, I don't know how to take care of my own needs. I don't know how to intuit and have faith in the fact of my own needs. So for her, having an awareness of the big picture all the time makes it difficult to say, well, to basically validate the fact that she actually has needs too. So this kind of, specifically in creating boundaries, energetic boundaries, so she can like live like a normal person and not just like a big sponge for everybody else's crap. To heal now, we need to examine the assumptions and beliefs that we took on in the past. One of the key things about them is that they are survival strategies for another time. They're survival strategies for a world and a self that are no longer relevant. Probably worked very well in the past, but to heal and to live the kind of life we want to live, we need to learn to live in the present. And so I want to say that because healing is about being present and losing what we think is happening and getting real to what actually is happening. And whenever we do that, we find these things that don't work that we believe.